I'm going to seemingly wander a bit. I'm going to refer to some great tantric texts, like The Cult of Tara and The Tangle Box. These are both great Buddhist works. I'm sure you're familiar with them. How do you want? So there are five of them. They're called The Magic Kingdom. Terry Brooks wrote them. And the first one, they're fantasy novels, do you know? The first one, he's lost the sense of emotional power in his life because his wife died when she was 3 months pregnant in an accident. And he's a great lawyer, so he's got that kind of mind that's stronger than the emotional sense. And so his whole emotional energy was in her. And then when she died, everything went black for him. And he gets an ad, a brochure in the mail that's from this store that she used to love to shop at. And he hasn't been able to look at anything she's done. And he, for some reason, leaves through this catalog, and it says for sale, Magic Kingdom, $1 million, which he ends up buying. That's the first book. Mm-hmm. He ends up buying this magic, and it is actually a magical kingdom. And this is, I think, the third or fourth book. And this is where he is now married to a woman who is what would you call her? She's like a wood nymph, only different. And about once a month or so, she has to turn into a willow tree in order to maintain her life energy in good balance, and spend the full moon period rooted in the soil and reestablishing her connection with all the elements in order to get along really well, right? So she is about to go to, she's pregnant, and it says that there could be some difficulties about the birth, right? Because sylphs don't give birth the same way like that either willow trees do or humans. You know. So she has to gather soil. Hi. From three different places. Thank you. In order for the child to be happy. So the three places are the Magic Kingdom, Earth. So of course, and the fairy mists, which three places. So she's first going to Earth first to get some, and of course she has to go to New York City, right? It has to be New York City that she goes to, and of course it has to be Greenwich Village in New York City that she has to go to. So this is what Terry Brooks has to say, and I like this reading to you, a real texts of the true tantric tradition. A la Terry Brooks. Find it out of it. So it's one of those things where I found the place where she would be doing that, but then they didn't. It's like soap operas, they switched the chapter to another character, so you have to be patient while I turn pages in. And find the to be continued of her story. Before the class, right? Okay, I'm playing it, so I give it up. So, what happens is that she is finding it very disturbing to be in the human world where people have been living in cities for so long, and the cities have gotten so successful at encroaching on the natural order of the world that the people in cities no longer understand that there is more than their own mind state and their own reality, and are so deeply absorbed in their own reality that it's impossible for them to understand any other form of balance of consciousness. But even more than that, she's afraid to enter. She finds that very difficult and very painful walking around in that kind of world. Maybe some of you can identify with that. But then on the other hand, she is much more terrified of entering the fairy mists where nothing is real, where reality is based on how your emotions interact with your imagination. Isn't that wonderful? Because this thing called reality is a very interesting thing, isn't it? Don't you think so? I find it fascinating. How much of reality is how your imagination interacts with your emotions? The whole teaching of shunya is that there is no inherent self. Do you understand the word shunya? If I say one of those weird words that you don't understand, you have to say, by the way. Thank you. Shunya basically means void nature, but it doesn't mean void. It means void more like in the Kabbalistic terms of the, and in the book of Genesis, in the beginning was the void. It means ripe with possibility but no inherent identity. Does that make sense to you? So shunya or shunyata, which means the state of shunya. Shunya means the void essence of all creation before I create a self. Okay. So from a Buddhist point of view, what is real is shunya. In which cause and effect is dancing. The cause and effect is real in that it will manifest. It is unreal in that it will unmanifest. So it is real and it is impermanent. Shunya is permanent. Is that clear? So how the emotions and the imagination, imaging, how you image. Do you know very few people actually see their bodies when they look in a mirror? Did you know that? Mostly they see their sense of what they look like. There are whole, when you look in a mirror, there are whole areas that you do not see because you have a habitual sense of what your nose is like, how your eyebrows focus. It's very hard to actually just see something just as it is for the first time. If you walked into and looked at your hand for the first time, you would be surprised at it. You would not recognize it. It would be new. But you can't look at it for the first time. Because however old you are, you have that many years of set up imagings to create a reality. And in North America, and in European tradition, and in the Judeo-Christian tradition, of which we are a part, you may have known this. Have you not? So sarcastic. In the Judeo-Christian tradition, really want there to be a reality that we all agree on. And we argue over fine points. Like the Irish. Like those, the Sikh moderates and immoderates in Vancouver. Like the Arabs and the Jews in Hebron. Like the French and the English in Canada. Hi, come on in. You understand what I'm saying here? Do you understand what I'm saying? Hi there, Vacuum Land. Is anybody going to nod at me?
Yes.
Thank you. Hi. Maybe you should leave the door open. Do you think that's it? Okay. Maybe you should leave the door open. What do you think? We'll let more air in, too. Right? Why don't you just open the door and lean against the door? Thanks. That's great. So, but it's very scary stuff to consider that reality is an agreed conception. It's very scary stuff, because then what is right, what is wrong, and what is insanity, and what is sanity? It's very scary stuff, isn't it? It is probably the most terrifying thing. To leave your cultural view, whatever your culture is, whether your culture is so small as a dysfunctional family, to being so big as a major tribal identity. Do you understand? Whatever it is, one of the most frightening things that we do as humans is to leave home. And then we have to continuously leave home. And we do lots of trade-offs, don't we? We have two main trade-offs we do to leave home, don't we? We're either good or we're bad. Have you noticed that? You either get mad at them because they're assholes, or you're an asshole so you can't stay, right? Do you understand? Those are the two main coins that we use for transcendence. Do you realize that? Do you realize that you do that? Or is this just too weird? Did I just make a leap that you can't follow? Did I? Mm-hmm.
Then tell me that. I want to know.
Say, what are you talking about? Excuse me. Just let me be heard. You're born into a world. You have a whole I call this like a whole field of propensities, of likelihoods, that is called you, that is born into a world that includes parents, a family, and like immediate identifiable cousins, aunts, uncles, etc., a culture, a race, right? And also species. So maybe you're born into a world where your family part is pretty weak, because maybe you're born as a turtle, a sea turtle, and your family is all those other eggs all rushing like mad toward the water. And slowly you get more lonely. The voices, the community, disappears as they're picked off by the birds or whatever. Do you understand? That's one kind of community. And you're born into another kind of community where there is maybe a little more protection for an individual birth. Maybe a kangaroo or something. Where your immediate family includes whoever you are, wherever you're hanging on to mom. With whoever else is in the pouch, with whoever else is in the womb. And what, 1 out of every 10? Something like that survives. Kangaroo, okay? So there's this whole potential possibility and a reality based on these experiences. Or maybe you're born as a human being. Oh, treasured one. You betcha. Doesn't matter whether it's dysfunctional or not dysfunctional. Oh, treasured one. Treasured on this earth. Not too often multiple births, although that's certainly changing, isn't it? With the kind of drugs that they can now use for people who are subject to barrenness or impotence. Do you understand that that's changing, as many things are? So here you are treasured. You're born as a human. It's an amazing thing. Although it seems to be getting more common. But it is an amazing thing. It's an amazing birth, because you have about 3 years where your brain is still growing after you're born, where you're both learning, absorbing, and creating, getting the extensions built in there to work with what you're learning and absorbing in a totally different way than any other species can do on this planet. It's true, isn't it? Does anyone disagree with me? Sometimes somebody does. I'd like to know. It's an amazing thing to be a human. And what is it that you do? According to Genesis, your name. Any of you ever read the Bible or the Torah? Genesis, right? Adam, what? Adam did what for God? Well, it was God's little test to see Adam, whether Adam was a working. And this is Adam before they're separated into Adam and Eve. This is Adam on the energy body level. You understand? Adam in Tibetan terms, in Sambhogakaya level, so where there is male and female together still. And with Adam, the archetypal figure in the garden. And what's he asked to do? What's the first thing he's asked to do? You don't read Genesis, huh?
In the animals?
Yes, you do read Genesis. Excellent. Here, God, whoever they may be, brings all the animals in front of Adam. We know who they may be. And says, you know, what's that one's name? What's that one's name? And Adam has to name them. Has to take the experience and create a reality that mirrors the experience in a way that is pleasing to God. Isn't that nice? That's what humans do. We name. Now, if you're trying to think about other than what is present, it's not good naming. And you're going to run dry. If you're trying to be without naming, that doesn't work too well either, because you're human. Okay, now, one of the difficulties with this naming is, like Willow discovered in the book I threw over my shoulder there, that that it creates such a powerful reality, like two or three humans, where two or three are gathered in my name, said Christ, there am I also. Yeah, in my name. Where two or three humans are gathered in any name, there that reality is also. But the reality that you are creating might be in a very limited, fixed understanding. What I was saying about Willow gathering soil from Greenwich Village, you know, where the city no longer took into account the non-city. So the balance isn't good. The thing about those kinds of realities is you can depend on impermanence. If you've got a reality that is based only on what you choose to ignore, eventually you won't have the power to continue to hold the walls up. Death will do you the great favor. Impermanence will do you the great favor of exposing you to a greater reality. It's guaranteed. It's guaranteed. You can be absolutely sure that you will meet a reality greater than one based on the cause and effect of an individual view, or even of a community, of a family view, or even of a community view, or even of a racial view, or even of a species view, or even of a planetary view, or even take it as far as you want. And then when you get that far, go outside the limits of that. And then you get what Willow was afraid of. When there is no reality except the one that the imagination is manipulated into creating because of emotional state. When your sense of agreed reality dissolves, that's what you got back. Or, like Elizabeth Kubler Ross's words better, the unfinished business of the past. The unfinished emotional business of the past takes the possibilities, the dancing energies, the yes, no's, likes, dislikes, when the views dissolve. Emotional reaction according to past fears creates fierceities. The fierceities are based on hatred. That's intelligence. You know? I don't like that. Very nice shirt, but the buttons are just wrong. Wrong. The intelligence does that, right? It just picks out one detail to hate or love. Which means it's hating a whole bunch of other stuff. Oh, you're not as good as him. Oh, you're not as good as him. I mean, he's wonderful. Kill, kill. We call it falling in love. I think it's marvelous, isn't it? Speaking about reality. So called. And when you're working with realities, the basic thing you're working with is yourself being accepted. Aren't you? If you don't follow that, just ask me.
Good. Yeah, I don't follow it.
Ah!
I'm Terry. Lost.
Imagine my surprise. When you're working with realities, you look for somebody who agrees with you. Would you say that's true? You gotta stop writing and actually listen to me.
I agree with you.
Let's go away together.
Oh, okay.
Exactly. Do you understand that? Do you understand what I'm saying, Terry?
Yes.
Yeah, it's very straightforward. Right. Yeah. We do not... We look for inner reality. The reality we join is the one that accepts us. You don't go to a party with people who are not in your family, social circle, race. Do you understand?
I do.
Which is your reality.
Go there. Go there.
Yeah, which is your reality. You understand? That is that's within your social circle to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's still of you.
Okay.
It's the parties you don't go to that I'm interested in. For anyone. for anyone is the parties we don't.
You mean the ones I don't get invited back to?
The parties that you act in a way that makes sure you won't get invited back. So
there. Is that fun? I would go to any party.
Pardon me?
I would go to any party.
Yeah, I know, Terry. And there are, that is itself a reality. That is itself a reality. Mm-hmm. And when I am at, and I too, mm-hmm. I haven't seen you there. And when I am at that party, the way, the words I choose or the way I act creates substratums of reality where either I will be rejected or accepted. Mm-hmm. I got there. See? Did you see that? Wasn't that clever?
That's so clever.
And so, depending on whether I feel like I am wrong or right, I look for that in the world. You're either on one side or the other. But the interesting thing about being good or bad, up or down, inside or outside, original thinker or non-original thinker, whatever it is that you have as your favorite identity, you can call it any of those things. I don't care. I don't care whether you say I'm bad or I'm good or, well, I have broader tastes or, you know. It still means the same thing. It means this is the reality that I operate within. That's what it means. And Buddhism says it's an illusion. Now that's a very powerful thing to say. When our whole society depends on us agreeing that that is real. Isn't it? No wonder it's a minority philosophical state. Of course, I can't call it a religion. In North America, because, you know, I mean, who in North America with their understood place in the world believe that it isn't an understood place, that it is an illusion, that the sense of reality in which you are struggling with is itself. That if you are good, you are also bad. If you are bad, you are also good. Because we like to have our heroes as heroes, do we not? Don't mess with my heroes or I'll kill you. We like to have our enemies as our enemies, you know? We haven't really evolved that far from the black and white cowboy hat. Of movies. Not in our heart of hearts. We have a lot invested in our identities, do we not? Your whole sanity, for example. She hated to go into the fairy mist. Because there was no reality there except for the reality that was made from emotion interacting with the imaging function. Powerful, eh? I am actually talking about Bardo and death. And what it is that dies. And I want you to understand that in Buddhism they say this really interesting thing. They say death is a temporary end to a temporary phenomenon. Mm-hmm. How terribly unsatisfactory of them. Hey, look, I want a big funeral, eh?
A big send-off.
But you're not going anywhere because you've never been anywhere but where you are. And you don't even. This is very different. What exists is the unfinished business, repeating the patterns, Anybody in this room ever had the same relationship three times with three different guys, three different women? Anybody in this room ever had that experience where she, he did that again? And that's another one who's untrustworthy? Gee, maybe it's not there.
Imagine my surprise.
Maybe it's not them. Maybe it's the imaging and the reality dancing together. Maybe it's your view of yourself. Oh, I can't be intimate because at heart I'm a rotten sod. Hard to say. But if you find things repeating in your life, it might be worthwhile asking whether anything else is possible. Or what it is you're clinging to. Now, you know, Buddhism is actually a reformed Hindu tradition. You know that, don't you? Just like Christianity is reformed Judaism. Jesus was a Jew. A rabbi. He had brothers and sisters too, did you know that? Sibs, just like most of us. It's something I've always wondered about. Anyway.
They don't make any mention of it in the Bible at all. But it's really like
that's very brief mention. Very brief mention of it.
Yeah.
Very brief.
Isn't that when, for the wedding? At Canaan, just before that, Mary and his brothers were coming. His mother and his brothers were coming. Yeah. Doesn't say anything about sisters, but we understand that. There, I got my feminist dig in. I feel so much better.
I don't understand.
I'll settle that. All right.
Explain
it
to us.
A wee little male.
He's being a man.
You know, I think that's really true. I think that's really true. Much as adolescence got me, at least I didn't have those testosterones rushing around. So I want to read you just a little bit from one of the Vedas, a little quote from one of the Vedas. This is you know the Vedas were the writings before Buddhism, right? And the Buddha drew heavily. In fact, I think at one point he said something like he only created two new meditations and the other 38 that he used have been around for 2,000-3,000 years before him, and he was 2,000 years ago. So, here I am, pacing through the pages again. You'd think she'd learn it.
that one's too big to throw. So. I have
No. This is from the Chandogya Upanishad. When the gods and the demons, both offsprings of Prajapati, did battle with one another, the gods and the demons, right? You got that, didn't you? The good and the bad. You know, the insiders and the outsiders, the haves and the have-nots. However you want to make a reality, then you're going to have to be caught in that reality. If I'm not also male, I'm in big trouble. When the gods and the demons, both offspring of Prajapati, did battle with one another, the gods seized upon the life principle of the Udgita, thinking that with this they would vanquish the demons. Mm-hmm. Because that's what it's all about, eh? Vanquishing the demons. We all know that, don't we? Be on the side of the right, or at least the powerful. They meditated upon the Yugita, which functions through the nose smell. But the demons pierced it through with evil. Therefore, with the breath, one smells both that which is pleasant and that which is foul. Thus the breath is touched by evil. They meditated upon the Udita as words, but the demons pierced it through with evil. Therefore, one speaks both truth and falsehood. Thus words are touched by evil. They meditated upon the Udita, which functions through the eye, but the demons pierced it through with the evil. Therefore, one sees both what is pleasing and what is ugly. Thus the eye is touched by evil. They meditated upon the Udita as hearing, but the demons pierced it through with evil. Therefore, one hears both good things and bad. Thus, the ear is touched by evil. Then do they meditate upon the Yudgita as mind. But the demons pierced it through with evil. Therefore, one thinks what is proper, true, and good, and what is improper, false, and depraved. Thus the mind is touched by evil. Now, isn't that wonderful? I have a friend that I regularly, who always tells me who's right and wrong in her neighborhood. Which means that in her own mind, in her own heart, she's always feeling that she is either right or wrong. That's what that means. And I always say to her, where will Hitler be reborn? Where? Right now, sometime, somewhere. Someone has a little baby. Baby Adolf. Have some Gerbers. Because it's a compassionate world. Come in, come in. Hi, nice to see you. Because it's a compassionate world, there is nothing that you can be separate from. If you hold a reality so powerfully, if you hold a reality so powerfully that you're holding something out, is that going to work? Because the universe is bigger than you. If you are trying to hold a reality where you are holding something out, outside of it, it's not going to work.
What do you mean by that?
You are not bigger than the universe. The universe doesn't have any problem with baby Adolf being reborn. Your view. Has a problem with that. Or the universe doesn't have any problem with Mother Teresa being reborn. It's your view that has a problem. When your identity has such a powerful sense of this is right and this is wrong, whether it's a negative or a positive, right or wrong, it's not a question. Then you are caught in what in Buddhism they call the root of all suffering. You're caught in clinging. It may be subtle, it may be not so subtle. And it's usually both. And the suffering will come. There is no one who's right. There is no one who's wrong. There is no one who is permanent. So therefore, you can be them all. You are the arising of a temporary set of circumstances. The Buddhism defines the self, one-third present supporting circumstances, one-third propensity, seeds of karma looking for a place to happen, seeds of activity from the past looking for a place to happen, and one-third aspiration, will, what you focused on, what you believe. That's yourself. Which third of the pie do you want to have first? That's yourself. So who dies, says Stephen Levine? What a good question. Who dies? What is death? Death is the death of a reality which you've been clinging to. Death is when the doors don't close. Remember that old song? This old house? Remember that old song?
This old house is getting feeble. This old house. Remember that song?
Who sang that? Ernie Ford or somebody like that? Am I that much older?
I don't know who sang it. No, I shouldn't say.
God, I'm getting old. Remember that song?
Yeah, no, it was, yes.
This old house is feeble. Even when you're first born, feeble. You've heard me say this so many times in so many ways, but it is so true. Just because with my thumb I can block you out of existence doesn't mean you cease to exist. Have you noticed that? Have you noticed that? Just because I block you out, that doesn't mean that you noticed it? Have you noticed that? Reality is bigger than you think? Have you noticed that? Your sanity is tied in here. Your sense of sanity is tied with emotional states. You have a reason for thinking certain things are right, certain things are wrong. The hardest thing to change is your mind. It will change, but in recurring patterns, round and round and round, very hard to catch. Chameleon, right? Because in between falling in love with that same person with a different name, you also fell out of love, didn't you? You also said, never again. I just can't stand the way he, she goes in the morning. Whatever. Right? The mind changed, but the pattern didn't. The pattern didn't. The reality changed. It moved. You called a different, you started calling them hun instead of by their name. Politic. And it becomes like that. The real person is less important than Hunt. Do you understand that? What reality might be as you grow older and older and older becomes less important than what you've banked your life insurance on. Your life insurance. That's your life. What reality is to you is what you protect by your choices, whether you get sick or don't get sick, whether you're successful or a failure. Those are choices. Who is the self? Unlimited energy in the universe. How are you playing? it was very terrifying to Willow to go into the fairy mists, because reality became whatever the emotions molded from imagination. It's a very profound little piece of data, isn't it, in that Mahayana textbook by Terry Brooks that I threw over my
shoulder.
That's a quote from here, which I couldn't find, so I'm quoting it. So do you see that I'm talking about death? Do you understand that I'm talking about death? As you start to die, you're... The red lights will come and go. But the emotion that is unfinished just keeps circling around.
What do you mean unfinished emotions? Is there some kind of a finished end to it or something?
You bet you're sweet, Bippy.
All right. Okay.
When there is no... See what we... And this is... This is really interesting. Actually, how long do you want me to go on and on and on tonight?
Forever.
Mm-hmm. Oh, come on. I'm helping you. I just before I get into that, I would like to do a little reading of something from this Great Maha. This is an exquisite book. Mm-hmm. I don't know. For some of you, it might be out of your reach. But I recommend it because it encourages you to reach. It's called The Cult of Tara. It's an exhaustive study into how Tara is practiced in Tibetan culture. And it's interesting that you asked me if I would do a green Tara blessing. because I have been doing Tara for the last few months rather exhaustively. So I found that really interesting that you requested that. So this is once more watching Cecily turn pages. Isn't this exciting? You know, you pay my weight in emeralds for me to come here from Calgary to see how well I turn the pages of a book. Isn't this exciting? You can tell a lot by how somebody turns pages, can't you? I call it a sense of humor. Other people call it Yeah, this is of Will you just repeat your question?
You were talking about unfinished emotional business.
Yeah, and how...
And I was sort of in contrast to finished emotional business. Mm-hmm. I guess mm-hmm. a finished end.
Yeah, the finished end is when, you, when you're no longer using emotion to create a wall. Okay. Now, how do you do that? Because from very young, we fall easily into the illusion that there is self and other, which is what creates the wall. There is an aspect of our mind that works best from self and other. Not only does it work with subject object, not only does it work best, it is the characteristic of being human. The naming principle requires that we withdraw from something in order to name it. You cannot name what you are part of. You can only name something when you begin to understand it. When you get far enough away to turn around and see its outline, then you can say, oh. You see? So that which is our greatest saving grace, our ability to comprehend, understand, see a pattern, name, also becomes our greatest curse, but the demons pierced it through. Because then we cling to the name. There's a difference between driving along the highway and seeing a sign that says Edmonton City Center, 25 kilometers, and getting off there because it says Edmonton City Center. Oh, I'm at Edmonton City Center, hanging on to the name, or driving the 25 kilometers. Do you understand that? There's a difference to clinging to a name or allowing yourself to perceive a reality, come to an understanding, then let go of it again. And go back into the fairy mists. God didn't stop at one animal with Adam. He said, Adam, what's this one?
Zebra.
Okay, what's this one?
Giraffe.
Okay, what's this one? Horse. Like the wind is a horse. Yeah. Horse. The wind. Eagle. Riding winds. Any way you want. Want to ride the winds over here, ride them over here. Want to ride them over here, ride them. Not bad being an eagle. You can get any view, but even if you got a fixed view as an eagle, you know that you are dancing the winds, you're dancing change. You can't cling to a view, you can't cling to a right, because as soon as you do, it's a wrong. You name something and let it go. Is when you name something and then you're afraid to let it go. Because you think that being right is what it's about. Or maybe a little more pressure on it and a couple of twists in there. And so because right and wrong, just like hot and cold or pain and pleasure, if you push them far enough, they turn into their opposite, right? You know that, don't you? That if you're sitting in meditation and you experience great heat, all of a sudden you won't be sure whether it's heat or cold. The same in the world. If you're walking in the cold, there's a point where you can't tell whether it's heat or cold. Mm. Pleasure, pain, the same. Do you understand that? Love and hate, the same. So if you can't be right, you'll be satisfied with being wrong. So just like you're going to be the rightest person, you're going to be the wrong one. It's what Jesus, you know, that rabbi, unless you be either, if you be neither hot nor cold, I'll spew thee out of my mouth. Why? Because there's nothing to work with. Doesn't matter whether you're hot or cold, good or bad, up or down. It's how attached you are to that that matters. How many lifetimes you want to repeat it. I'm going to be right one more lifetime. I'm going to be wrong one more lifetime. It was very interesting. I spent a week in Ocala, which many years ago I was a prisoner in BC. I don't know if you know these things. I have a varied education from my adolescence, which I mentioned earlier. It was very interesting how many of the people in there, there were six of us in the cell I was in. One was in for manslaughter, one was in for armed robbery. It was her fourth time, and she was going to be in for and blah blah blah, and especially the ones, a lot of the women there, who had been really bad. Do you understand? I don't care, good or bad, doesn't matter to me. But who had been really bad were really glad to be in jail, because it was right that they were bad. Do you understand? It was right that they were caught when they were bad. It fits reality. And when they got out, they were going to be really bad so they could be caught again so they could go back to jail. If your view of reality gives you a certain position and you're clinging to that position, that's what's going to cause. And the unfinished business is the emotional belief, the emotional sense that at least that makes you safe. This is the right thing to do. At least I'm safe. I know who I am. You've got two choices. You can be everybody or you can be somebody. If you're somebody, you're going to be that person who? If you're everybody, you're going to be able to see everybody and everyone you meet. Hmm? You understand me? Mm. You don't understand me? You do understand? You don't? Mm-hmm. You understand that? If you can look in someone's eyes and see Adolf and Jesus both, you're in good shape. Where is Hitler going to be reborn? Welcome into your womb, because I got news, he's already there. All the saints and all the sinners, all there racing through your blood, pissing out your urine, digesting in your food. What can you be separate from? If you hold yourself separate, that's unfinished business from the past. That's something that you felt you needed to wall. Do you understand? For some reason. Something to cling, something undigested, something unfinished. So what do? You accept it, you let it finish. You don't repeat the reality of it, because the reality wasn't true then. That will just recreate it in the present and in the future. Having that same relationship 10, 20, 30 times didn't end the pattern. You could have had it another 10, 20, 30 times, couldn't you? Hey, folks? Couldn't you? Whatever it was, whether it was a relationship with a job or with a neighbor or, you know, with a bus driver or with an actual lover, you know, having that same pattern of that person understanding or misunderstanding you this or that way, or you understanding or misunderstanding them this or that way, it'll keep repeating. I mean, you know, only the name and the body and the lifetime is changed to protect what the innocent who don't exist. Harsh, maybe? Am I being too harsh? Because that is the nature of a human consciousness, to be able to create realities. And hopefully then let them dissolve. Now, how clever are these Tibetans? Because, you see, there is a different concept of reality. The Tibetans understand that reality is self-conceived. just the self is larger or smaller. It's either a person or a family. Self as person, self as family, self as community, self as race, self as species. Do you understand? Is that good? Mm-hmm. I keep saying you understand because there's a whole bunch of you sitting back there who are doing vacuum land to me, so I don't know whether you follow what I'm saying or not. You're sitting there like this. And you know how much I like response. So that's why I interject this boring. Do you understand? So what the Tibetans do is they say, well, okay, image yourself as a deity whose emotional pattern is unconditional love. Well, holy cow, ain't that clever? Imagine that you're awakened. Well, I'll be. What a concept. And it's true. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that a brilliant way to work with what is already present? You imagine yourself bad, so you keep going back into jail. Which is right. It proves your reality is true. You imagine yourself good, so you keep sending people to jail so you don't have to see them, because if you're good, you should only see the good. So that proves right, unless there's a riot, of course, because so many people consistently are bad, that reason. The jails are so crowded, you've got like five in a space that should have one. A real hellhole there. And then you can say, oh, they shouldn't have it so good, or, you know, do you understand? Because good is good, bad is bad. You know what the Tibetans say about war? If there's a war, the best thing to do is to support the losing side until both sides are equal. Because then they have to come to an agreement. One side won't win or be perceived as a winner. Because if there's a winner, everybody's caught. If there is respect, then there are things that you see differently from this point of view and things differently from that point of view, and then you start learning how to respect different points of view. Adolf and Mother Teresa as twins. So this book is talking about how you practice and practice and practice being able to visualize Chengrezig or whatever, Robert Sinclair or whatever, Kathy Sinclair. A practitioner who can thus form at will these special appearances and special ego. So you identify, you begin to visualize a deity, and then you identify what their identity is. Okay, here is a deity whose identity is compassion for all beings, no matter where they are. Hey, talk about an ego trip. Now that one is really vast. And then you try imaging that and moving in and out of it. Isn't that beautiful? What a skillful way to use humanity. These special appearances and special ego. A practitioner who can thus form at will these special appearances and special ego. Is in conscious control of both his external and internal reality. The world he lives in is one of his own choosing, one that he owns. There is a further contemplative exercise to reinforce the symbolic potency of this new reality called the recollection of purity. And this is the very basis, the very seed of these practices, which is a meditation upon the implicit meaning of the divine image the practitioner has vividly visualized, and upon the ontological values of his new identity. In some contemplative rituals, the recollection of purity is performed immediately after the vivid appearance and before the exchange of egos, because that's what you do. You have a vivid arising of the figure, and then you imagine, image, that the ego structure is, you are the same, you are that ego of that being, and that being is not separate from the ego structure of your life. Well, another said it's blah, blah, blah. Blah, 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 blah. Well, it's kind of funny, blah, blah, blah. Well, I'll read it to you anyway. Those of you who have studied Buddhism will like this. Anyway. The symbolic interpretations of the deity whom the practitioner has become are often rather far-fetched and obviously after the fact, like the 32 marks of the Buddha. Do you know these things? Like, you know how many, you know what some of the 32 marks of the Buddha is? One is that his arms are so much longer than his legs that his fingertips actually hang down below his knees. That's one of the marks of an enlightened being. Isn't that exciting? He has a hair that's curled around here, curled and curled around, that if you pulled it out would reach further than Jupiter or something like that. I mean, these are the marks of enlightened people. So this is what you look for, you know? Next time you go to the washroom at Eaton's. You never know. The Buddha could be anywhere. Anyway, so that's not the funny part. I'm just and the same interpretations are often applied to different deities. Here's the funny part. Since Buddhist philosophy is so fond of numerical lists, that it can easily provide a meaning for anything that can be enumerated. Ain't it the truth? But the contemplative exercise is an antidote to any reification of the visualized deity. The practitioner is reminded that he has become not a thing. Not a thing, not a fixed thing, but an expression. That his new set of appearances, ontologically just as false or as real as his old set. The only person who really can give a wonkle is somebody who does not believe it. Is at least meaningfully symbolical in a way that his old reality, fabricated and construed, could not have been. Right? Do you want me to read that sentence again? Yeah, because I broke it in the middle, okay? But the contemplative exercise is an antidote to any reification of the visualized deity. The practitioner is reminded that he has become not a thing, but an expression. That his new set of appearances, ontologically just as false or as real as his old set, is at least meaningful symbolically, in a way that his old reality, fabricated and construed, could not have been. You're exchanging something that is a very clear value rather than something that is subject to the seeds of karma ripening in samsara with ignorance. You're exchanging ignorance for clarity. It's very beautiful. And he is provided by its very artificiality. This is the part that really, as far as I'm concerned, it's just the celebration of a human birth. And he is provided by its very artificiality with a clue to the source of all appearances. And a mechanism for understanding the Genesis. By the very artificiality of appearance, then stop looking at appearance and see what is also there. See what it is that is the generator, the Genesis of all appearance, and what does all appearance dissolve into? Nothing? Okay. Then what is no thing? What is this no thing? Now that is what in Buddhism they call shunya. And that's what I'll talk about tomorrow. Do you have questions, answers, comments, or complaints? See, we did good and evil today. I read a little quote from the Upanishads. Was I reading that when you came in?
No.
It's one of my favorite little quotes. It's great, eh? Then did they meditate upon the mind. Not the demons. The good guys and the bad guys. Okay. You got one, you're going to have the other. Right away. The form isn't different from emptiness. The emptiness isn't different from form. Questions, answers, comments, or complaints?
So you can't have good without evil.
If you got one, you're going to have the other.
Yeah. From the tree of knowledge.
Yeah, you split the world. Yeah. Isn't that neat?
Mm-hmm. Is it
another way of looking at it, too.
Rooted into the ground.
Pardon?
Rooted into the planet, or into this reality.
No? It is a fact of naming. But if you go after the fruit of the naming, rather than allow the fruit of the naming, if you cling to it, do you understand? If you only get your nourishment from the fruit of the naming, then pretty soon you get more and more separated from being. Because your names start meaning more to you than known names.
So do you name the evil, but you don't?
There's no such thing as evil. There really isn't. There really is no such thing as evil. I, in my experience, which as I admit is limited, but, you know, a certain dash of salt and pepper here and there, as I mentioned already, I have seen where the murderer is in this heart. And I don't have any mistake about that. I've seen the one who has malice, like real malice. I hope you break your leg. Mm-hmm. I've seen the one who is totally compassionate. I've seen the one who suddenly transcends all possibility to reach for something for others. I've seen all those things. And I've never seen any one of them stay. Dependent on the conditions, they are there. Part of the conditions are what's around me. So a lot, especially when I was younger, a large part of what I was what was expected of me. So my family all talks about how good I was when I was a child. Yeah.
What about the issue of safety? There are some people that I feel that I'm not clean enough or clear enough to help. I can see that they need help. And I can see that I could try to get help, and I could see that I could become very unsafe very quickly.
Absolutely, and that's wonderful that you learned that. And then I think the next thing that you need to know is realize that there is no such thing as safety anyway.
I'm not persuaded, I'm sorry.
Okay, but there isn't. Safety is the right answer, isn't it?
What about safety in your body?
Where is it I'm going to go? My liver?
Sorry?
Is my liver in my body? You're asking me about safety in my body, or are you asking me about safety in your body?
Safety in my body.
I've never been there. It could be different than mine. I would tell you there's no safety in my body. Do you want to know how I learned that? Mm-hmm. Well, there I was just going to catch a bus, and this damn 4-ton truck ran over me. Mm-hmm. Like, one minute I'm running across the street, the next minute I'm doing a slow circle up in the air, looking down, and all sound has stopped, and it's all in a bunch of pictures. Mm-hmm. Is that the kind of safety you're talking about?
I'm not sure, but the difference is that you didn't know that the bus was going to be dangerous.
The bus wasn't dangerous. Mm-hmm. A truck hit me. The bus wasn't dangerous at all. What is it? What's the difference? Mm-hmm. I was going one place, mm-hmm. and something else with a different kind of power was going another, mm-hmm. and our paths intersected.
And would wisdom be stepping back?
Pardon?
I don't know.
There was no place to step. There was no place to step. I was going one direction, mm-hmm. and something of greater physical power was coming in another direction, mm-hmm. and our paths intersected. And the law of physical power was the one that was operative in that case.
Okay, but that's random, and I'm talking about choosing to engage someone who is unclear, who's confused and very aggressive. That's not quite the same thing.
Yeah, no, I don't go out at night in dark clothing and dance. I put the street lights out on the main street and dance around in the traffic to see if I can dodge trucks. Mm-hmm. No, I don't. You're right. Mm-hmm. And absolutely, but, you know, you can pray. And prayer is directly working with the emotional states, and it will work. It works on the emotional states of others. Mm-hmm. You can pray. Yeah, there are a lot of things you can do, actually. You can pray for them and for yourself. You can try to see what the fear is, what part of yourself that you're not looking at, that makes that person unsafe. I also do that. Like if I find myself terrified of someone. I got two choices. Either they're going to kill me, understand, or batter me, or rape me, or abuse me, or torture me, or maybe become my dentist. Oh my God. And I don't mean to make too much light of it, but it does help, doesn't it? To lift it a bit like that. Okay. Or I can acknowledge that all of those things could possibly happen anyway, right? And so it's not them that's the enemy, but it is those things happening to me outside of my control that I'm afraid of, right? And separating those two allows me to work with the emotion in myself. So it's the inner war I get to stop, thanks to my beloved teacher, Namjong Rinpoche. I can say it's the inner war that I have the difficulty with. That's just another person. Does that sort of give it a different twist for you?
Yeah.
I don't think it's something you haven't thought of.
It helps, thank you.
Yeah. Because if I am working with a fear and something in the outer world triggers that fear, it's the fear here that is being triggered. And only if I can hold my reality a certain way will I not run into that fear. So therefore, either I'm going to try to figure out how, no matter which lifetime, I'm going to be able to control my reality, or I'm going to realize the impossibility of that and say, okay, I better find out how to work with this fear. So that person represents to you a messenger. They're saying to you, by the way, you do have this fear, you're still fairly young, you're bright. You have a lot of richness of choice in your life. Might be a good time now to work with it rather than when you're dying or in extremis or when that damn truck does come, when you're trying to catch that damn bus. If you got time to ask the question, you got time to address the real fear in yourself, separate from the person. And I would recommend it, because they don't go away, these ones. They become the unfinished business, which rule lifetimes. Is that all right?
Yeah.
Oh, and isn't it wonderful that I just exposed my teacher and all that and show you what a rat's nest this place is? Just on your first introduction. Thank you so much. Yes.
So, if things have been happening in our lives, with, for example, 3 deaths in 10 days, should I be looking at this and what am I supposed to be?
Yeah, you should be looking at this and you should be saying, is this a pattern? I would think in this case, I would say, is this a pattern for human lives, that when the sun is at its lowest point, it's an easy time to leave a human body? Do you understand what I'm asking, what I'm saying? Okay, I'll say, yeah, you should look at that pattern and say, rather than saying, is there something that I'm doing with this, which may very well be true, but I doubt it. Were they 3 people who were intimately involved with you?
2 were close friends from the past.
Yeah. And I know that within a 6-month period, 3 people I knew committed suicide. In 3 different places. Were these people suicides?
No.
Okay. Yeah. And so it's different. And I took that as very real, that my desire to destroy a fixed reality, which was what I was into at that time, I was trying to be a totally free spirit without any reality. I was like this close to madness all the time. That was not a safe way to operate. And that was why I was able to start to study some reasonable way, rather than trying to challenge life from the outside limit, begin to have compassion for myself and for others, and therefore able to hear my beloved teacher. And in that case, it was very clear, you know, like you're dancing right on the edge here, you know, which I was. In this case, I would think that it's probably more an indication, yes, that there is a real pattern here. The pattern is that, for example, my mother, who is 86, this time of year is the hardest for her. This is the time of year I always expect her to die, because the light is the lowest, you know, the physical sun light. There's least of it. And there is this almost introverted energy with the winter and with everything. And it's probably a great time to leave a body. Probably the easiest passage out, it would seem to me. This or springtime, it would seem to me. You know, the very peak of the darkness, or else the real movement into another form. Those two times seem to me the easiest. So I would take it as a pattern that way. That doesn't satisfy you, though, does it?
Yeah.
What other question do you have below that question?
Well, another thing I was thinking about when you were talking about, just when you talk about encountering the same thing over and over again, like it's almost like a test, and if you deal with it a different way, maybe like what you were saying is seeing a deity or seeing God in
mm-hmm.
that person,
mm-hmm.
and opening up to more compassion,
then
that's a great
thing. Absolutely, you bet, your sweet bippy. In fact, I often give an exercise to people, which is really a nice one to play with, just to try and to watch the mind that does not want to open. And that six times a day you stop, and no matter where you are or what it is, you just stop and look around, and you put a big smile on the inside of your face, and you say, I approve. And you just watch your mind. Is the guy at the donut shop here? Do you remember that? Ooh, he's not here, is he? I don't think he's. There's a man, I've forgotten his name, but I gave this exercise last year. No, it wasn't here. She just automatically assumed it was you. I gave this exercise in Edmonton last year, and then I have this nasty habit of asking people what happened the next day. I ask them what they did with the exercise and what happened. Yeah. He's not here, is he? Yeah. And so I asked about this exercise, and he said, yeah, well, I was in a donut shop when I thought, oh, yeah, we're supposed to do this. And so I looked around, and I could see six things I approved of. Now, wasn't that clever? Just no, approve of six times a day, approve of everything. That's the everything. Yeah. Well, I like the cooler and the Boston cream's okay. What an attitude. Talk about your reality. Any other questions, answers? So try that. Approve six times a day. And just watch. Just, you know, just take a moment, look around. Yes, sir.
I had a question when you were talking about your accent there. It seems to be a great deal of confusion around the issue of cause and effect. And with that accident, some people may be of the opinion, well, you attracted that accident into your life. Like people might say that.
Why? Because you're talking about
that,
karma?
Yeah, you needed that accident to complete some part of yourself, or, you know, et cetera. So this kind of situation. And like, I have a great deal of difficulty with that myself, understanding that whole kind of thing. Do you have any comments?
Sure. The karma means activity, the mm-hmm. actions. The karma that I was performing was the karma of ignoring traffic. One of the really interesting things about ignorance is that it's no excuse.
So you didn't necessarily deserve that, or you know.
I don't think that man who was driving that truck deserved to hit and run over a 16-year-old girl either in a 4-ton gravel truck. He had other things that he would have preferred to be doing. He was just in terrible state. I didn't know how badly I was hurt, you know. Mm-hmm. I had no idea. I didn't know, because I didn't lose consciousness and I was just watching everything. But he was the one, you know, and a lot of times it's easier for the person who's undergoing the extreme extreme painful activity, although later incorporating it into your life because you're traumatized and split off, later incorporating it in your life is difficult. But the person who's watching is frozen in a different way, so. That doesn't satisfy you, though, does it?
Yeah.
What other question do you have below that question?
Well, another thing I was thinking about when you were talking was just when you talk about encountering the same thing over and over again. Like, it's almost like a test, and if you deal with it a different way, maybe what you were saying is seeing a deity or seeing God in mm-hmm. that person
mm-hmm.
and opening up to a more compassionate way than that would break sometimes.
Absolutely. You bet your sweet baby. In fact, I often give an exercise to people which is really a nice one to play with, just to try and to watch the mind that does not want to open. And that's six times a day you stop, and no matter where you are or what it is, you just stop and look around and you put a big smile on the inside of your face and you say, I approve. And you just watch your mind. Is the guy at the donut shop here? Do you remember that? Ooh, he's not here, is he? There's a man who I've forgotten his name, but I gave this exercise last year. No, it wasn't. She just automatically assumed it was you. I gave this exercise in Edmonton last year, and then I have this nasty habit of asking people what happened the next day. I ask them what they did with the exercise and what happened. Yeah, he's not here. And so I asked about this exercise, and he said, yeah, well, I was in a donut shop when I thought, oh, yeah, we're supposed to do this. And so I looked around, and I could see six things I approved of. Now, wasn't that clever? No, approve of six times a day, approve of everything. That's the exercise. Everything. Six things. Yeah. Well, I like the cooler and the Boston Cream's okay. What an attitude. Talk about your reality. Any other questions, answers? So try that. Approve six times a day. And just watch, just, you know. Take a moment, look around. Yes, sir.
I had a question when you were talking about your accent there. It seems to be, I read a little confusion around the issue of cause and effect. And with that accent, some people maybe have the opinion, well, you attracted that accident into your life. Some people might say that.
Why? Because you're talking about karma?
Yeah, you needed that accident to complete some part of yourself or. You know, et cetera, so this kind of situation. And like, I have a great deal of difficulty with that myself, understanding that whole kind of thing. Do you have any comments?
Sure. The karma means activity, the mm-hmm. actions. The karma that I was performing was the karma of ignoring traffic.
You'll get you
every time. One of the really interesting things about ignorance is that it's no excuse.
So you didn't necessarily deserve that, or you know.
I don't think that man who was driving that truck deserved to run over a 16-year-old girl either in a 4-ton gravel truck. He had other things that he would have preferred to be doing. He was just in terrible state. Yeah.
So it was an accident.
I didn't know how badly I was hurt. You know, I had no idea. I didn't know because I didn't lose consciousness and I was just watching everything. But he was the one, you know, and a lot of times it's easier for the person who's undergoing the extreme extreme painful activity, although later incorporating it into your life because you're traumatized and split off, later incorporating it in your life is difficult. But the person who's watching is frozen in a different way, so...